The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra Premier League Preview Transfer Window Special. The window has literally just slammed shut. Lukaku, Luiz, Lo Celso, Carroll, Cancelo and Sessegnon, and 40 million for Alex Iwobi. Lots have done deals and some that didn't quite make it. Just what are Paulo Dybala's image rights worth? And did Danny Rose do an Odemwingie? We'll give you a club-by-club look ahead to the Premier League and pick out some of the signings in the Football League as Wayne Rooney agrees to go back to Frank Lampard's Derby. We will, of course, take your questions as well. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, Barry Glendening. Hello.
Hello, Max.
Nice to see you.
And you.
Happy deadline day.
And
I can't believe a deadline day as the window has slammed shut. Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Hello.
Would you say you are more, less, or equally as grumpy as Monday?
I'm absolutely buzzing.
Ah, great.
Because, of course, today is publication day for my new book, The Names Heard Long Ago, and I've just seen the Sunday Sports review of it.
Oh, what did the Sunday Sports... I mean, I imagine it's not pornographic enough for the Sunday Sport.
You'd think that. Hmm. And yet you got a five-star review.
Oh, cracking.
Come on.
Well done. Lars Sivertsen.
Hi, Max.
How are you?
I'm also buzzing.
Great. What's the biggest thing you signed on deadline day today?
I haven't signed anything.
Okay.
I have a podcast in Norway now, which is exciting.
What?
Yeah, I do a 15-minute podcast where I just talk about something from the football. Put it right out there.
What's
and
it
is currently, I believe, fourth in the iTunes charts for Norwegian podcasts.
Oh, excellent news.
Which makes me raise some real questions about the algorithms they're using, because it can't possibly be the fourth most listened to.
Norway is a land of boring TV, isn't it, where they specialise in...
So this is the opposite. It's very short. Still,
okay.
Still probably boring, but very short.
Do AHA have three podcasts?
Probably.
One each. And what's your podcast called?
PL Cortella,
if you want to listen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
It's the first thing I've ever plugged on air, so I'm getting it in right early.
Well, no, fair enough, Lars. And good luck with your new project.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go through the Premier League club by club, everybody.
Has somebody got a stopwatch to make sure we give each club the exact same amount of time? Because there will be accusations of bias.
Who do you reckon, before we go through them, we will spend the least time on? Watford or Burnley?
Bournemouth.
You think Bournemouth? Okay. So apologies in advance to Bournemouth.
Oh, they should be grateful to be there. For God's sake, look at them.
Yeah, I think Bournemouth's a good show.
Okay. So we'll start with Manchester City then. Rodri, Cancelo in, also Angelino from PSV, and Zach Stefan from Columbus Crew. Delph's gone, Danilo's gone, Douglas Luiz is gone. It seems like Pep spotted two potential problems that we all sort of knew, holding midfield and left back, and has kind of done something about it, even though Cancelo is a right back and has said, I want to be the best right back in the world. But even still, how strong of favourites are they, Jonathan?
Massively. And I think you're absolutely right, that if you're looking for weaknesses, and... Yeah, I think it's testament to how good City are that you start looking for weaknesses rather than say what they're good at, because they're just really, really good at everything. And the weaknesses were potentially lack of depth back in midfield, an issue at left back where Zinchenko, I think, didn't have a particularly good community shield, and you know, he's pretty inexperienced, may well develop in that role. And particularly with Delph going, they needed another body there. I think possibly they still have an issue at centre back, that they've only got the three, and I'm not, you know, Stone sort of fell out of favour towards the end of last season. Kompany, I think, will be missed in terms of personality as well. It's already brought on the pitch. But I think he was quite a key figure in keeping everybody calm towards the end of last season. Otamendi, I'm not entirely convinced by ever, but yeah, he's clearly decent. And then the only other question you might have about City, this is, you know, I'm really scratching about trying to find reasons why they might not win the title by 15 points, which they will, is there have been some suggestions in pre-season that even by his standards, Guardiola is being particularly intense, and whether players can stand that or not, I don't know. I think that has been an issue in the past in his third and also in the fourth seasons at clubs, that did become did make the environment very precious.
Why would he become more intense? It doesn't feel like he needs to.
No, but I just sort of think when you're already a pitch of intensity and you want to get even better than you already are, when you want to stave off complacency, when he still has that frustration of not winning the Champions League, how does he make them better? He just does the same thing, but more so. And he just seems to be somebody, yeah, I think we've seen it at both Barca and Bayern, that the that intensity, that that what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of a not, paranoia is not quite it, but that sort of that terror of missing things, that kind of determination.
FOMO.
To, sorry?
Fear of missing out?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. The this sort of desire not to leave any detail untouched. That does seem to sort of build up in him, and then you know he needs a break and needs to start again, and yeah, maybe now he's mature and that's not going to happen. But that, yeah, I have heard a couple of things in preseason players going, God, he's even more than normal.
So like when Bielsa in, after Spygate was talking about, like, we don't do all these things because we think they work, we do them so that we feel at least we've done them. That
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yes, it is that same mentality. I just think Guardiola maybe transferred that to the squad more than Bielsa. For whom it's all kind of, I must watch one more video. Yeah. I must look at another line of data.
Yeah.
Whereas
I must shout some more at Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, quite.
But yeah, definitely the only thing Man City have to fear really are Man City themselves, I think. You know, if they're going to keep playing like they have and put up something near 100 points, there just isn't. There's no catching them really. So it's really about that. And I think when we look at, especially Rodri, you know, provided that he succeeds and fits into the system, which, you know, Charity Shield was a very good step in the first direction. There is something about, okay, they spend a lot of money, but they spend it quite smartly. Like, they plan these things very well. They've identified that, okay, Fernandinho's getting on a bit and we need someone in that position, even though Fernandinho is still kind of good enough, and they preemptively replace him in that way. And you can contrast between the way they've sort of, they get their business done and they fill all the areas of the squad where you think they need filling. Just across town to United, like, I'm sorry, United fans, but the contrast between where City are at with their squad on deadline day and where United are at the moment is extraordinary, and that's not just about the money they've spent, it's also about the brain's trust behind it.
Yeah, you say all that, but it is strange that they haven't bought a left back. I mean, I don't know who starts at, who is their left back? Is it Mendy? Is it
presumably when Mendy's fit again, but then Zinchenko, maybe he's seen something in him that he wants to persevere with him a little bit.
And then they've got two more players as cover, so I mean, it's,
I know, we're all splitting hairs.
Maybe
it's not
maybe,
ideal,
maybe
but
they rate Angelino quite highly.
Yeah.
Angelino, left back.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but, yeah, whether or not he'll
I mean,
be good enough.
You can even, in extremis, push Laporte out there.
And, yeah. And I wonder, with Cancelo coming in, if we'll see more of that. Actually, they might end up trying Kyle Walker as a right centre-half, with the Rodri or Fernandinho dropping in when they have the ball and making a three anyway, and Cancelo, because Cancelo's a very attacking right-back, right? You don't really want him to be doing any defending, so you might use Walker's recovery speed behind him. I mean, that could be something.
I think we're really scratching around trying to find flaws. I think City are an absolute lock for the title. The only thing I can see stopping them winning three in a row is the players getting sick of Pep and just not playing for him anymore.
I mean, I think
and I'm not saying that's going to happen. I just think it could happen.
Yeah, yes, I think they'll win. I personally think they'll win the title by around about 12 points. However, I don't think it's entirely inconceivable there could be a spectacular meltdown towards the end of the season. I think when it goes, if it goes, it'll go big. It won't be.
God, that would be great fun.
It won't be. Oh, they drew a game away at Leicester that they maybe should have won, and that cost them a title. It'll be, boom, they'll lose three or four in a row and.
Is there a possibility that they will go for the Champions League so much?
Maybe. I mean, if they have to prioritise one, you'd think they'd prioritise that one. And I think on Kompany, they might be missing things off the pitch, but I think they missed something on the pitch as well, is that they're a really short team. I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying they're the shortest squad in the Premier League. And with him, they had a bit of aerial prowess defensively and at the front end of things. And I think it's really interesting how in the home stretch last season, when they really needed, they couldn't drop any points at all. Pep really put a lot of faith in Kompany, even though he was kind of old and slow.
Sane's going to have surgery on an ACL injury picked up in that win on Sunday. In the Community Shield, their first game away to West Ham, early kickoff on Saturday morning.
Think of the damage Andy Carroll could have done to that short back line.
Allaire has got, if he ever gets the ball, you know.
Hey, we're not on to West Ham yet. So
if you are
a West Ham fan and you've got your stopwatch ready, that's 2.4 seconds we've already done on West Ham. Okay, then Liverpool in Adrian as a reserve keeper and Sepp van der Berg. So.
It's Adrian Fever on Merseyside.
Are you surprised they haven't signed anyone, Barry? It sort of seemed like you always hear that, oh, when you've done well, you need to just get a couple of in to you know, keep the squads on their toes.
I'm not particularly surprised. Jurgen Klopp seems happy with the squad he's got. They've served him incredibly well. I wouldn't have been surprised to see someone coming in. Maybe, you know, their front three are probably going to be tired at some point. They've all had long summers, long busy summers, but he clearly has faith in the abilities of Rhian Brewster, who will, I'm sure, be given opportunities to shine. So, no, I'm not hugely surprised.
So they lost two strikers in Ings and Sturridge. So that is backup from the front three. And Harry Wilson gone as well. You mentioned Brewster. Who else have they got? Shaqiri?
Origi,
who, yeah.
I think, didn't do it much last year, but when he was on the pitch, true, he was quite decisive. And I think,
again, he's useless unless there's 5 minutes to go and you desperately need a winner or you're playing Barcelona.
But I think
in those two circumstances,
yeah,
he's
after
the best
scoring
man
an important goal in the final and sending Barcelona out of the Champions League, it would be a bit harsh to sort of dump him out of the club, I think. So giving him some chances would be good.
Obviously, you're right, but there has been does appear to have been a vault fast on him that I don't think Klopp, at this time last year, would have envisaged keeping him for this season.
For sure. And but on the sort of you should replace when you're on a high thing, yes, they did win the Champions League, but I also think if you miss out on the league title by a point, having put up the third highest points total in Premier League history, like, you're going to be pretty hungry and motivated going into the next season, right? I don't think anyone's like complacent in that club at all. And it's all sort of a particularly Arsene Wenger cliche about having people come back from injury is like a new signing. But it really will be if Oxlade-Chamberlain comes back and can perform to his ability, if Lallana can stay fit in any sort of way. You know, Naby Keita, we still haven't seen the best from. So there are people who can come in and contribute more than they did last year.
Now, I suppose there's always a danger that you only in a preview thing like this, you only really talk about new signings and you sort of forget that they've got lots of players who are already at the club who may be getting better and maybe improving.
Absolutely. And
I think there's two other issues there. That one is the previous three occasions when finishes runners up, they've lost a major player that summer. So they lost Anelka and they lost Xabi Alonso, then they lost Luis Suarez. They've kept everybody. So that's a big step forward from the last 20 years. The other thing is that idea of signing from a position of strength, that was always Bob Paisley's dictum. But I think Paisley was, I'm not saying wrong to be obsessed by that, but I think one of the reasons he was obsessed by that was that he'd seen Manchester United in the late 60s, early 70s, and then Leeds in the mid 70s. He'd seen their squads grow old together, and he was very aware of the dangers of letting that happen. This Liverpool squad is very young. There's only three players aged 30 or more in the squad. And the only one of those three you'd think of as being remotely a first-team regular is James Milner. So they can't go 3 or 4 years without signing anybody, but a year without signing anybody, that danger of growing old together just isn't there at the moment.
I can't see Liverpool getting near City this season or anywhere near as close. I think they rode their luck at times last season with injuries and in certain games where they were gifted late winners. Now, I appreciate they also had some stinking luck when, you know, that, what was it?
11 millimetres,
John Stones hooking off the line. They're going to have to contend with a trip to the World Club Championship in mid-December, I think it is. That'll take them out to Qatar for 5 or 6 days. And, yeah, I think they shot their bolt last season and wasn't quite good enough, and I'd be astonished if they got it.
Do you see them being second outright by a long way, though?
Yes, definitely.
And backing up exactly what Barry said, but in a slightly more boring way, our old friend expected goals suggests that they did overperform a little bit last year compared to where they should have been in terms of the chances they created and all of this. So they probably got the absolute maximum out of what their performances suggested.
All right, then. Chelsea, who have... let David Luiz go to Arsenal, which is sort of fascinating transfer. Has that been totally confirmed at time of recording at 5:42 p.m.? We're waiting for the paperwork to still be done. Paperwork can still be done up until 7 p.m.
Well, credit where it's due. A friend of the show, Tim Stillman, suggested when Edu was made sporting director that we should keep an eye out for links to Kia Urabshan represented players, which David Luiz very much is. So that seems to have come in there.
In a Chelsea, from a Chelsea point of view, I suppose it's interesting that, you know, Frank Lampard has made a decision quite that strong to sort of say, listen, this is what my plan is and you're not going to be in it. Presumably, Luis wouldn't be going if he'd been told he was first choice.
If Luis isn't in the starting a lineup, he does seem to be somebody who can be quite disruptive. I think that's. And he also seems to be a player who really divides coaches. Some coaches, you know, like his energy and his sort of total commitment, and some sort of think he's pretty unreliable. And Lampard is obviously in the latter camp, so you might as well ship him on.
He's got a real thing against centre-backs, hasn't he, Lampard? Cahill has gone. Thomas Callas has gone. Ampadu, who can't play holding midfield but also centre-back, he's gone out on loan. So he just wants to get rid of all the centre-backs they've got. Who have they got then?
Andreas Christensen.
Rudinger.
Yeah, Christensen presumably is going to get a lot more game time this season. Rudiger.
Is that it?
Zouma still there.
Zouma, yeah.
Still, that seems sort of light.
I mean, Aspilicueta has played in centre half in the three-man back line. He might try him in a two as well. It would be a bit odd, but, you know.
We must have forgotten somebody. Have we forgotten somebody?
Can put Bakayoko in there, maybe?
But yeah, but I mean, it just seems odd to have got rid of that many centre-backs when you've got a transfer ban. Doesn't it?
But maybe, I mean, Luis might not have given them much of a choice. I mean, he might have just made it very, very clear.
He had that kid at Derby.
Fikayo Tomori.
Yeah, that's him, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Maybe he really rates him.
I saw him in the under-20s. The under-21s that England were the best team in but lost all their games. It was the under-21s, wasn't
it? Yes, it was.
So it could be any international tournament that you've watched ever.
You're probably right.
I'm actually not that down on Chelsea. A lot of people are sort of freaking out about the transfer ban and all of it. But I think there could be a blessing in disguise there. Like, they have a lot of good young players who deserve to get minutes on the pitch at some point. Frank Lampard, I think, has a lot to prove as a manager, but he comes with a lot of goodwill behind him. I don't think there'll be a disaster. I really don't.
No, I'm excited. I think for the first time in a long time, playing, you know, Mason Mount and those and young players like that. I don't know if you agree, Baz.
I'm certainly looking forward with interest because I think the jury is very much out on Frank Lampard and the job he did at Derby County. I think there were sixth in the table when he arrived and there were sixth in the table when he left. And he didn't get them promoted, which was why he was employed. But there will obviously be a huge amount of goodwill for him from Chelsea fans, although we're kind of seeing signs from Old Trafford that I suspect that good kind of goodwill could evaporate quite quickly, transfer embargo or no transfer embargo, because football fans are very impatient. In my notional table of who'll finish where, I have Chelsea seventh.
Do you?
Yeah.
Does anyone have anyone put them that low as well?
No. I have them fourth or fifth, I think.
Okay.
I had them fourth, but now I probably have them fifth after Arsenal.
Yeah, that's the calculation I'm doing. I have Arsenal done enough to kind of bump above them.
I was asked to do a table prediction in late July, which is not a very nice assignment to get. And I think I ended up putting Chelsea fourth, but I think Arsenal now.
They got Manchester United away 4:30 on Sunday. I mean, that's fun for lots of reasons.
That's a fascinating encounter because whichever manager loses is immediately on the back foot. And if Chelsea win this game, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is on the back foot in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, there's more pressure on Solskjaer than Lampard in that game. If you lose at Old Trafford as a Chelsea manager, you know, it happens. If you lose at home your first game, doesn't matter who it's against, that's a problem immediately, especially given the way last season finished.
Yeah, they failed to win any of their last six or seven. Was it? Six, I think. Only drew two, lost four.
Yeah, I'd sort of forgotten about how almightily badly Manchester United played at the end of the season.
They were at one point in a position where they just needed to beat Huddersfield and Cardiff to get into the Champions League, and they got like 1 point from those two games or something. And it's just, you can't. Yeah, as much as I want to defend my compatriot, there is no defending that, no matter how tired they were.
It is from Norway's position. Although this isn't the Manchester United section. Well, wait, Lars. I'll ask you a Norway-based question.
No. We haven't really mentioned the fact Eden Hazard is no longer at Chelsea.
Very good point.
His absence is going to be massive.
Last season, not only the top dribbler in the Premier League, but also the second highest in terms of key passes per game. So he was both the best sort of guy at getting past people and also one of the most effective playmakers in the league.
How many tackles did he make?
Exactly right.
How important is Pulisic, who comes in from Dortmund?
I mean, he's 20, so you can't expect miracles. He didn't play. He played 9 league games in last season. So, look, he's obviously a very skillful player. He's got a lot of potential, but you can't expect the 20-year-old, having just moved to a new country, to be brilliant immediately. And I really hope that he is given time. It's not. I mean, I guess he doesn't have to start, does he? They can play Willian and Pedro, and they've got Hudson-Odoi when he gets back from his injury.
I mean, it's hard to tell with Chelsea, but in any sane world, this season is a bit of a free hit for them. Because like, you've got the transfer ban, you've lost Hazard, you have an inexperienced club legend as a manager, and you're going to play loads of young players. Like, no one will expect him to win the title or even come anywhere near. So surely you should just, even in the sort of Abramovich era Chelsea, this should be a season where you just say, all right, just play and get on with it and see how it goes.
I mean, I have this very strange thing. The chances are they won't finish as high as third, which they did last season. They won't win a European competition, which they did last season. They won't get to the final of a domestic cup competition, which they did last season. And yet, come the end of the season, everybody will still be a lot happier than they were.
And happiness matters, right?
So they say.
You'll find it one day. Spurs, they had a fun day today, didn't they? Lo Celso in, Sessegnon in, Dybala not in because of his image rights or something. Danny Rose went to Watford's training ground, but Daniel Levy turned down a bid for him. How have they ended up, Lars, would you say, Spurs? Dombele is in as well, obviously from Lyon.
Yeah, pretty good, I think, all in all. They've strengthened in some positions they needed to strengthen. I think Ndombele is a really exciting signing. I think Lo Celso has a lot going for him. I think in his heart of heart, I suspect Daniel Levy would have preferred to sell Christian Eriksen rather than let him walk out of the club for free next summer.
I guess he could go still. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fair point. But yeah.
Well, presumably the logic was to try and effectively swap Eriksen for Dybala.
Yes.
I'm not saying a straight swap to Juve, but
because yeah, if they do sell Eriksen now, like, they still have plenty of options in that position, but it's not ideal. I think getting Sessegnon in is I think that's a canny signing. They were linked with him before, and he's obviously seemed like a pretty obvious fit for that sort of, whether they play him out wide or in the sort of rampaging left back role.
It's almost like he signed and Danny Rose got in his car and drove to Watford, said that's it, if he's here I'm not coming. But he's,
I'm a bit surprised that bid was turned down, actually, given that he's 29 now, Danny Rose, and Spurs, they do like getting some money for the players while they still can. And I mean, I don't know, it's a strange one.
I think Danny Rose drove to Watford because if Watford turned down, or if their bid was refused, there was a sporting chance Arsenal, whose training ground is right beside them, might see him loitering around and go, we'll have him.
Could someone explain image rights and exactly what happened?
Well, I think your agent probably should do that, to be honest.
Not specifically for me, but mainly for Paolo Dybala.
It's a particular issue with players coming to the UK because we essentially don't do it in the UK. We don't allow a player to be hived off into different sections. But so Dybala has the image rights. He sold off to a third party, which means that any promotional photo of him, any use of him in advertising, the money doesn't go to him. It goes to this third party to whom he sold those rights. In the UK, we don't allow that. It's part of the anti-third party legislation we have here. And so that's just very complicated to get over. So there was some suggestion even this morning that they might be able to work out a loan deal, which would somehow bypass that and sort it all out later with, a loan deal with an obligation to buy. But it pretty quickly became apparent that that was too complicated. So that's the issue.
I watched Lo Celso's YouTube highlights earlier today, and he's looks from that a mix between Messi and Maradona, I'd say.
He's really good. I really like him.
He's exciting, but it's funny because he came over to PSG initially from Argentina with a big reputation as a very, very talented player. But because PSG are, or certainly were at the time, a bit of a madhouse in terms of squad building, they ended up playing him like as a holding midfielder quite a bit, which clearly isn't what he should be. So he had a bit of a strange time at PSG, but when he went to Betis and was played regularly in his best position, he was really, really good, and he's an exciting signing. I think it's an admirable bit of transfer shithousery from Tottenham and Betis here, because from what I understand, PSG are due quite a big chunk of his transfer fee as a sort of a sell-on clause. So what they appear to have done is that he's joining Spurs for the 1 year season with an obligation to buy, and they've got to put quite a large loan fee on there to make the eventual transfer fee a little bit smaller. Now, I'm not a sports lawyer. I haven't seen the wording in all the contracts. I'm not sure if this will actually work, but it seems like a very canny way of making sure Betis ends up with a bit more of that money.
I mean, that is rude, isn't it? It's just rude. Done a deal. Is right back a problem for them, Barry? Kieran Trippier's gone. So they've got Aurier, Kyle Walker-Peters as senior right-back. Swan Foyth's injured at the moment, but he has played right-back.
I don't think so. I don't think Kieran Trippier had a particularly good season last year. I would expect Kyle Walker-Peters to get more game time. There was talk of him going out on loan this morning, I think, but apparently that hasn't materialised. But no, I wouldn't see it as a huge problem. I think what might be a problem for Tottenham this season is that I don't think Maurizio Pochettino will be in charge by the end of the season.
Really?
I think he'll be gone somewhere else. I get the impression he's really fed up with Daniel Levy, and I imagine there'll be no shortage of offers for his services, possibly from the Bernabeu or Old Trafford, the season progresses.
They have spent, you know, 130, 40 million odd.
And he did go on holiday with Levy in the summer.
Did he?
Did they go rafting again?
Yeah, they go on holiday with each other. I mean, I was always so odd about that little explosion he had about, well, I'm just the coach.
I could well be absolutely wrong, but I just have a feeling he may not be in charge, but come season's end.
I mean, you all seem to have Man City as champions with Liverpool out on their own in second, but nowhere near City. Do you have Spurs guaranteed third?
Third for me, Clive.
Yeah, last?
Yeah, me as well.
Wilson?
Not guaranteed, but yeah, that's, yeah. I think it is possible they finish above Liverpool.
Interesting.
I don't think it's likely.
But it's possible they finish below Arsenal as well, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, anything's possible,
Max.
That's the beauty of the game,
City,
right?
Liverpool, Tottenham would be what I'd imagine.
Fair enough. Let's talk about Arsenal then, because they've had I was doing a drive on TalkSport for 3 weeks, during which most of it was Arsenal fans being very angry that they didn't have any money.
But they seem to have signed, certainly Pepe, maybe others, on like a long-term
installment.
Since they're not a risk that they'll end up on an episode of like, if you can't pay, we'll take it away. And they'll come, like people will come and put Pepe into a lorry and drive him off.
talk to us about Pepe.
He's really fun. He's like a dribbling, goal-scoring, wide forward type man who can go past people. Looking at his goal stats, they're slightly misleading because he scored something like 9 penalties last season. So when you see he scored 22 goals and you go a bit wild, you should bear that in mind. But still, 13 goals from out wide is a pretty good return as well. I think you obviously, when he was signed, a lot of people will have looked at Arsenal's squad and said, hang on, like, have you spent 80 million on a winger? This is weird. But I think if you look at an average number of dribbles, successful dribbles per game, Arsenal were way down the league last season. I think they were something like 10th in the league or something on that particular statistic. So they have lacked someone who can go past people and can create stuff. And that's certainly something Pepe will add to them.
Danny Ceballos as well, which I thought translated as Little Onion, but you're telling me it's just Danny Onions, is it?
Well, yeah.
Danny Onions?
The team that Maradona played for initially, the youth team, was called Los Cebollitos.
Right.
The Little Onions.
Okay.
So I think, yes, about... So
Max here really putting paid to the phrase, he knows his onions.
It's Danny Onions. He's the younger brother of Graham Onions, the England
Durham Senior,
yeah, medium baser. Should Arsenal fans be over the moon with him as well?
I think he's immensely talented. I think there's certain personality issues there, but you know, he's a kid. Maybe he'll grow out of them. But he's an exciting risk to take.
Add some flavour to their midfield.
Is anyone excited about David Luiz's first massive rick as an Arsenal centre-back?
Well, he's going to be the object of no end of ridicule. I think he's a terrific signing. I absolutely think it's a brilliant signing for Arsenal.
He's a terrific player.
Yes, he's gaff-prone, and when he goes down in flames. But he is good.
He's less gaff-prone than Mustafi.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've bought boring, sensible David Luiz.
The mistakes he makes are odd, right? They're often because he's ended up in a very strange position where you can't really compute, like, why is the centre-half standing there? And there is something to say about, like, when you make mistakes, you want mistakes that don't look completely outlandish and weird. That's why it's better to sort of whack a penalty way over the bar than to fail at a Panenka, right? Because it just looks worse.
Oh, fair point.
There's something, yeah. I would also say, I am tickled by him and Guendouzi playing in the same team. And when will we have the first case of like Guendouzi being sent off in a case of mistaken identity?
Although Michael says, at what point in the season will the David Luiz Guendouzi as Sideshow Bob memes become utterly tedious?
I actually, in an interview with David Luiz, asked him if he felt he looked more like Sideshow Bob or Kenny G. I'm pretty certain he didn't know who Kenny G was. So he said Sideshow Bob. to keep it safe.
Excellent.
Top journalism by me there.
All I know about Kenny G is that Glenn Hoddle was a big fan.
That doesn't surprise me.
Famously, when he told Gazza he wasn't going to be in the squad for the 98 World Cup, he was playing Kenny G. Gazza went mad and smashed the room.
Saxophone moods in the background. Barry, how irate were you at Laurent Koscielny's Bordeaux announcement?
I thought it was very funny. A lot of Arsenal fans thought it was very disrespectful, which I suppose it was. But
did that make you think it was funnier?
Yeah, of course.
And of course, Kieran Tierney has signed £25 million.
I think that is an absolute steal, given current market prices, and not least because I believe Alex Iwobi has signed for Everton for £40 million, which just seems ludicrous. Tierney's he's young. He's been playing first-team football for Celtic for at least 3 years, three full seasons under his belt. He's played Champions League. Yes, Chelsea aren't facing the quality of opposition he'll be facing when he's playing for Arsenal, but I can't believe Celtic let him go for that little amount of money.
Manchester United, Glazers out was trending, Woodward out was trending all day. Manchester United fans seem very unhappy about the whole window, Lars. Have they done enough?
Just keep checking the internet now while we're recording to see if there's some sort of announcement there, because it seems extraordinary that the club with the third highest turnover in world football is going into the season with Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial and I guess Mason Greenwood as their only strikers. That is a bizarre state of affairs. So surely with this Lukaku situation, either you've decided you're not going to sell him come what may, and then you don't sell him come what may, or you've decided, okay, we have a point at which we will sell him, but then you have a replacement of some kind lined up, right? That's how any sane club would do this.
Do you think Ollie fancies a gig as a player manager?
I mean, he might have to.
I suspect he's probably still a better centre forward than he is manager.
I'm not going to reply to that. But it is, no, it's extraordinary. And there was... I mean, he had this mini rant after the defeat against Everton, famously, about how now he's going to be successful here, but there'll be some players who won't be around. And the whole mood going into the summer was that it was going to be a clear out and a rebuild and all of this. And since then, they've lost Lukaku and they lost Herrera. And yeah, they've strengthened the defence, but I'm not convinced they're actually that much better off than they were going into the summer.
Pogba could still go as well.
Exactly.
Seems unlikely.
That would be completely insane at this point.
They could use Sanchez as a sort of false nine as well. That's the other, in terms of just a body who can do
the
job.
I'm very excited about the prospect of seeing that. That'll be very successful.
He's sort of done that for Chile with success.
He was an incredibly false nine last season.
It's a spurious nine.
They're also light in midfield, aren't they? So, yeah.
But listen, I guess the thing with United, if we're trying to find an upside here, is that they have a lot of players who are either young and could step up, and they have some players who have been better elsewhere, like Fred. Fred has played well prior to joining United at a good level in the Champions League with Shakhtar. Like, he can be a better footballer than he was last season. Lindelof can be a better footballer than he was for most last season. So they have guys. Sanchez maybe suddenly discovers something again. Like, they have
Sanchez,
and then there are young players.
Had quite a good Copa America. It looked like he'd rediscovered something there.
Yeah, and then there are quite a lot of young players who could step up and could become good. But again, I think it's an outlandish state of affairs for a club of their resources to go into a season thinking, okay, we're going to need this and that player to step up if this isn't going to be not terrible.
I know what you mean, and you're obviously fundamentally right. And I guess I'm doing the opposite of what we did with City, where I'm trying to find bright spots in the absolute wasteland that is Manchester United's hope at the minute. And the whole of pre-season was all about sweat. I don't know if you noticed this.
Yes.
But like every single player interviewed was dripping in sweat.
Right, okay.
Solskjaer seemed to be wearing a tracksuit at one point in hot weather in order to sweat while doing an interview. Every single piece that the sort of journalists embedded with the squad in Australia and where did it go, Hong Kong or China, was, you know, everything was about how much they're sweating. And it was all about, oh, we're doing two sessions a day, okay, and making them sweat. So this idea that they weren't fit enough last season, which I think is probably... They were maybe fit enough to play Mourinho's way, which obviously is sitting back, it's not pressing. There's a very conscious, we're pushing that aside. Now, if you're playing a sort of radical pressing game, which is what Sanchez did with Chile, that's where he sort of came into prominence, then you don't want Lukaku slowing things down. So maybe that makes some kind of sense. That said, I don't think Solskjaer is a man to organise a radical pressing game, and I think it'll be a terrible failure.
Also, I mean, it could just be the humidity where they were.
Yeah, but there's still a... There's a lot of teams have toured. I mean, look, I'm a sweaty man. I can't deal with humidity. I accept that. But still, there seems to be a big focus on it. Even I, a sweaty man, notice their sweat.
But, like, I hear all of that. I'm just saying, again, in the sort of Man United transfer window joined up thinking, if the whole plan is to press higher and be further up the pitch and win the ball closer to the opponent goal and all this, why are you spending all the millions on Harry Maguire, who has a lot of qualities as a centre half?
But pace on the turn is not one of them.
Not one of them at all. Yeah. Like, this is, true. Again, very odd. It's almost as if they have no one with a sort of overarching plan here. Looking at this, very odd.
No, that's a totally fair point.
And at a time when everyone else, not everyone, but most other people do have that.
Did they make any good signings in the commercial partner department? You know, noodles or Cadillacs
or
steam irons?
Well, if I were them, I'd be going after a deodorant partner.
Sure.
Well, what I would say... Actually,
it's antiperspirant, really.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, really I've merged the two quite wrongly. You're right.
That's okay.
My really Maguire, good sure joke just fell out completely deaf ears there. The audience will have got it. Yeah.
Maguire is at least a left-sided centre-back, which they weirdly haven't had, apart from Rojo, for ages.
Yeah, no, I like Maguire as a signing. I'm just not sure I like him that much if the plan is to push up high. Because then that doesn't make sense.
At least he can play on the left.
And it's just when Solskjaer was appointed, the whole theory was that, oh, he'll be there until the end of the season, and they'll spend that time getting a sporting director in place and revamping their whole system and everything. And they seem to have not done any of that. The Guardian's Jamie Jackson did a piece on this a few weeks ago, suggesting, and he's a good reporter, I trust his insight and reporting on this implicitly. He said that basically from United's perspective, they're so happy with the business they've done this summer that a sporting director is not an immediate priority anymore, which is bonkers because you don't know if your business this summer has worked out for you or not. It's very odd.
Lars, Jonathan and Barry both said that Solskjaer will be gone by Christmas. Do you agree or disagree?
I just think it's really hard to predict what Man United will do because they seem to act quite irrationally sometimes. And I mean, what's reported and what's said is that Woodward is quite sort of, he cares a lot about what the fans think and the PR and how things look. So I think if the fans are still right behind him, then that might buy him some time. But I mean, regardless of whether or not he's a good manager, I think just the state of the United squad going into the season is not where you want to be if you want to have a go at this. And again, it could be that some of these young players step up and have an amazing season, and that would be really good. I'd love to see that, but they might not, and then it doesn't look very good at all.
Tom McGee sums it up with a tweet saying, lots of people worried about Dybala to Spurs, but it might just be the wake-up call Ed Woodward needs to finally get us an official water balloon sponsor. That'll do for part one. In part two, we will focus on the Everton Cup. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Then let's preview then the teams just below the top six. The Everton Cup is now officially the Wolves Cup, but we all know it's the Everton Cup.
Well, since Everton won it, hasn't it? Burnley won it the year before.
It's true. It's been a long time. But Everton could do it. But we'll start with Wolves since they won it last year. Some decent signings. Youngest squad in the Premier League this season. Bought in five players and made Jimenez and Dendonka permanent. Who of the new players should we be excited about, Lars?
It'd be interesting to see Cotrone. I think he could work well in the Premier League. He's a hard-working guy. Maybe not a sort of refined and elegant striker, but he's a hard guy who, again, works hard and gets into good positions. And if they get the ball to him a lot, I think he's a good sort of option to Raul Jimenez up front. I guess their window was more about making some guys permanent who were there on loan and this sort of thing. I quite like Wolves. I worry about the Europa League factor. I think their squad isn't the deepest, and having to do the Europa League has been disruptive to so many teams before them. So that would be my concern.
Was also, Europa- it something like eight players played 30 or more games last season? So if you're trying to retain that level of stability and cope with the Europa League campaign, I think that becomes very difficult.
The Europa League factor, I think, is huge. I did some number crunching today. Last season when they were in the Europa League, Burnley got 14 points fewer than the season before. Season before that, Everton got 12 points fewer because they were in the Europa League, but in a season in which in the Europa League. Season before that, West Ham, 24 points fewer. season. Oh, that season as well, Southampton, 27 points fewer than the previous season when they weren't in the Europa League. Southampton, the season before that, again, are an outlier, but they didn't actually qualify for the group stages. And the season before that, Everton, in a season in which they competed in the Europa League, got 25 points fewer. So statistics would suggest that Wolves will get a hell of a lot less points than they did last season. But they could buck that trend. They are a good team.
Those are very good numbers. And I would also add that like Arsenal and Chelsea last season got away with it because they could basically play a B-side and that B-side would be strong enough to do a decent enough job. I'm not sure that's true for Wolves. I see they're playing pretty much their strongest 11 down in Yerevan against Punic. So they have to travel back from Armenia. They're 3-0 up as we speak. But like having to travel back from Armenia...
6,000-mile round trip.
Not ideal going into the first weekend of the season. And they don't have that much depth. So I like Wolves a lot. I think they're in the top half to stay. They've got serious money behind them. They've got smart people running the club, seemingly. But I think this season could be a bit of a rough one.
They go away to Leicester on Sunday afternoon. Another team going for the Everton Cup. But let's do Everton then. Iwobi in, Moise Kean, Delph as well, amongst others. Everton fans are very excited right now. They start to think this is the chance. Are they the team that you are putting in the top six over Chelsea, Barry?
I have them fifth. So
what?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
That is exciting for them. On what grounds?
Well, I think the signed very astutely. I do rate their manager. I don't think they'll be as flaky this season as they were last season. They've got a very gentle introduction to the campaign. Palace, Watford, Villa, Wolves, Bournemouth, Sheffield United don't have to play. Man City till the end of September. I think that will help them possibly build up ahead of steam. And I'd be very optimistic if I was an Everton fan.
Would you say Moise Kean is the most high-profile signing? Some people will not know about Jean-Philippe Bamin from Mainz, Lars.
Well, I mean, he, I guess, is the guy who's going to have to do what Idrissa Gueye was doing. And I think maybe they've underestimated how big a task it is to replace him. In terms of just ball winning, like tackles and interceptions, he's been right near the top of the top leagues in Europe for the last couple of years. I think he does a very big job for the midfield and is an uncharacteristically canny signing by PSG, actually. And just looking at their team, there's a lot of exciting stuff going forward there. But I do wonder about them at the back. With Gueye leaving and with Zouma not coming back this season. I mean, they made an attempt late attempt in the window to get Marcus Rojo in, and that can't be a good sign. So I think there's a lot of... I look forward to watching Everton's games this season, put it that way. I think they could be a fun team for neutrals.
I suppose the thing is that there are all these teams that look like they're competing, you know, Leicester, Everton, Wolves, maybe West Ham, that they're going to take points off each other as well, aren't they?
Yes. I mean, I still think that tier is probably better than it's been for a long time, while acknowledging there's still a bit of a gap to make up to the top six. But, you know, as we said, there's certainly United and probably Chelsea, because of the transfer ban, are potentially vulnerable in a way they maybe haven't been for a while. So I think there's more chance of somebody breaking that top six than there has been for some time, but it's still a big step up to make. But Everton signings, I thought they were having a brilliant window till today, and it seems to me that, you know, Everton are sort of responsible for two of the least explicable transfers of the window. One, Moise Kean going for next to no money to a club that, frankly, you would expect him to have ambitions to play at a higher level than that, and then Alex Iwobi for what seems an extraordinary sum of money.
Though it is incidentally almost the same sum of money.
Yeah.
But I guess that is the point.
Well, Kean was 24.75 million.
That's got to be an upfront, really? Isn't it? I think it's nearer 40.
That is it nearly 40? Okay.
Yeah, I think.
Well, anyway.
I mean, who knows when we're talking about Mino Raiola.
That is true. Well, we know he will have got quite a lot of money.
But yes, he'll be fine. You can stop worrying about him.
But I like the Kean transfer. I share your puzzlement for sure. But I like seeing... It's fun to see a young player who will purposefully step out of the sanctity of a massive sort of serial winning club where he could stay and get enough time on the pitch to pick up some medals. And
repeatedly racially abused. And
well, there's that.
It.
But he's gone down to a lower level where he'll be the main man and... you know, he'll get more responsibility. I think that's cool.
On the subject of transfer fees, fun fact from producer Jonathan. On the Premier League website, Andre Gomez is the only player to have transferred to a Premier League club this summer with a disclosed fee of $22 million. All other transfer fees are undisclosed. So are we all just guessing? Are all the numbers sort of total guess? How right are we when we say, you know, Maguire is $80 million or whatever?
Well, I guess we trust press reports from the people and the sources who tend to be more right than wrong. But you're right. I mean, whenever we talk about wages in particular, and to an extent transfer fees, a lot of the times we don't really know. We're just assuming that what's reported is correct, which is kind of the only way we can talk about it in a manageable way.
Leicester City, could they break into that top six? Brendan Rodgers got them playing nice football. They've got exciting young players. Obviously, they've lost Maguire, but...
Yeah, I thought so. I was really big on Leicester, and then they sold Maguire, fair enough, but they don't seem to have replaced him. So, I mean...
Yeah, we were waiting for Dunk or Tarkovsky or
something like
some
that.
Some big
and,
man.
And that just doesn't seem to have happened. So they've got the Turkish fella, who's, with apologies to all our Turkish listeners, I'm sorry, but this is not an easy name for me to pronounce. Çalhar Sonuçlu, something?
Okay.
Sorry, big apologies. I don't want to be disrespectful. I'm sure he's a good player, and I'm sure we'll say his name a lot this season because it's either him or Wes Morgan.
Kaglar Soyuncu.
Sorry?
Kaglar Soyuncu.
Very good.
I could be wrong too.
But he's been there a while.
Either way, he's there. Presumably the idea is for either him to play next to Johnny Evans or for Wes Morgan to do so.
I'm not sure Wes Morgan's good enough to hack it in the top flight anymore, and he was a fine player in the season Leicester won the league, but he looked very slow last season at times and was caught out badly a few times.
But Soyuncu, similarly, a bit like Vasilevsky, is these basically look like rugby players who you draft in.
And this again, Brendan Rodgers presumably wants to have possession. I mean, he wants to play slightly higher up the field. So again, Wes Morgan, big character, important guy in the dressing room and all this, I'm sure, but is he what you want to have on the pitch? But either way, like, there's a lot to like. I mean, they were really good. Like, their average points haul after Brendan Rodgers came in the spring was very high, high enough to put them in the sort of top four contention, I think, over the course of a full season. Jamie Vardy scored a bunch of goals after Puel left, and I think he's a... I mean, you look at the odds for him being top scorer this season, they're much longer than I think they ought to be. He wasn't actually that many goals away from it last season, and that was playing him more than half the season under a manager who didn't seem to like him. So I think that he can be an outside shout there.
With VAR penalties as well.
This is the other thing, yeah. So I'm actually quite excited about Leicester. It's just that centre-half situation seems a bit odd.
Very sad that Okazaki has gone to Malaga, yeah. Because I loved Shinji Okazaki. I mean, he still exists, doesn't he?
There's a period towards the end of September, beginning of October, where Leicester have to play... in the space of four games, Manchester United, Spurs, Newcastle and Liverpool. I think that will tell us a lot about their credentials as far as getting into the top six.
I think Newcastle will be very pleased you put them in that.
Well, I thought it would be churlish to admit them.
It is a fixture they have to play. West Ham fans are also giddy, aren't they? Will the hope... I mean, they can't all do well, these teams, can they? I mean, one of them has to not come seventh.
11th.
11th?
No, I think West Ham this season might actually be...
The surprise package.
8th. I think...
That's crazy talk. Yeah.
But I think they've genuinely done really good business. I think, you know, I think that is, rather than just signing up, you know, a load of sort of like the NHS All-Stars and sort of actually kind of...
Yeah, but the West Ham...
Yeah, but...
It's the West Ham way. 11th.
But isn't Pellegrini better than...
Yes.
...than we all give him credit for?
Well, he gets plenty of credit in this podcast, I think, but it's West Ham.
No, but Allaire's a proper player. You know, he's not one of these joke centre-forwards we have for the last decade. He's actually somebody who can hold the ball up. He can bring all their creative players into play. They've got Yarmolenko back from injury. Yarmolenko, I think, is a
aren't all
the really
creative
good player.
Players gone to China on a big contract?
No, but he's a disruptive one. He's got skill, but was kind of undermining the squad. Now, Yarmolenko, I saw him, you know, the game away at Everton last year. He was brilliant,
yeah, was,
and then
yeah.
He got injured almost straight away. Felipe Anderson, started slowly, but by the end of the season, looked really good. You got him on one side, Yarmolenko on the other. I think I'm looking forward to West Ham.
Is getting rid of Arnautovic, Nasri and Carroll. Is that good or bad for a dressing room?
One window. It's terrible news for physios who are paid by the hour.
But, I mean, West Ham last season were all right, pretty decent going forward, but well leaky at the back. And I do love the fact that they've gone into the summer thinking, yeah, let's get even better forwards and just not really bother with defence. That's an admirable approach to things. And like Everton, I look forward to watching them. I completely agree about Sebastian Haller. The only question is, I mean, that's the player he was in Germany, right? In his former club, but you don't know because he's moved to West Ham now, and there seems to be this sort of force field around West Ham that whenever strikers go into, they apparently become completely inept and confused.
You could call it a vortex.
Yes, a striker vortex of doom. So maybe he'll be afflicted by that. But apart from that, it looks very exciting.
Watford have signed Ismaïla Sarr from Rennes for £27 million. Winger who plays on the right, usually, has played across the front three, got 8 goals and 7 assists for them last season, as well as 4 goals in the Europa League. They were knocked out by Arsenal in the round of 16. How good is he, Lars?
He's interesting. I think he could do stuff in the Premier League. Having him and Deulofeu, I think, in the same team could be fun because they both like quite quick and run with the ball and create havoc.
Blind alley footballers are fun, though. I mean, watching Steve Claridge, just occasionally for Cambridge, just run with the ball side to side across the pitch, get absolutely nowhere. But it was
quite a different blind alley footballer to Steve Claridge.
No, I'm not having it. There's one type of blind alley footballer, and they're all the same. Welbeck's come in. Good signing if he's fit, I guess.
But he's just sad for Danny Welbeck, who I think, whenever he's actually been fit for 6 months, always looks a very good player. He's very good. It's when he's at Sunderland, but just seems to have a body that lets him down all the time.
A dad joke from the dad of @Rachel_SG. The new Sardini combination sounds a bit fishy. Oh, dear.
Delighted.
Have we talked enough about Watford?
I think Watford are the one club you'd say have a slight sort of, you know, we often say about clubs, mid-table clubs, they have a sort of existential issue of why do they exist? What's the point of them? And you still think Watford, last season, I think it's pretty much as good as they can go. Yeah, we get to the cup final, we get smashed. They finished, 11th in the end. But actually doing pretty much everything right, given budgets and whatever. And so you end up thinking, well, where do you go from there?
You either do that or you do a sort of boom or bust year where you actually just go hell for leather and it doesn't work out like Fulham. And then I agree with you. I existentially sort of wonder for mid-table Premier League clubs, what is the point?
Well,
what's the point of anything, right?
They're the only one where that's really true this year. I think, you know, the other teams we talked of all have hope of being slightly better than they were. Watford, I just don't really see how they can be.
I think definitely agree that the mid-table existential vortex is a thing. But what I would add is that, I mean, maybe that's a bigger thing for us who talk about it as sort of neutrals and we're looking for grand narratives and exciting things. Whereas if you're a Watford fan, what you have is a team that's playing in the Premier League who will, you know, win more games at home than they'll lose. So you're probably going to have a good time when you go watch them at the weekend. They got some players who are fun to watch, who you'd pay your tickets to go and see, and you can watch them, you know, do you and the tribe proud on match of the day in the evening every weekend. And I just don't think that's a terrible place for Watford to be.
Home to Brighton on Saturday. Crystal Palace. Wilfried Zaha is still there, but pretty sad about it, I imagine, Barry. Is it better to have a sad Wilfried Zaha at your club or
no Wilfried Zaha at all? I saw some Palace fans were very angry about the manner in which he handed in a transfer request the day before deadline day. Everton appeared to be the only team with a realistic chance of signing him, but Palace wouldn't agree to the amount they offered, which I think was believed to be around 70 million. But so I suppose it just depends on whether he spits the dummy or puts his head down and shows everyone what a good player he is. I think I can understand why Palace weren't willing to let him go because they didn't really have time to get a replacement in. He is crucial to their survival hopes. I think they could be in trouble this season. And although Milijevic is there to take and score all the hundreds and hundreds of penalties they'll get if Wilf is prepared to, you know, do his mazy dribbles and collapsing in the box antics, I would imagine with VAR the Palace will be getting no shortage of penalties.
From up to Joe, since the start of 2017, Crystal Palace have won just 6 points from a possible 45 in the 15 Premier League matches that Wilfried Zaha hasn't played any part in. Roy Hodgson sent him home from training today because he said he wasn't in the right state of mind. Said that Zaha's problem is with the owner and the board, who didn't receive a fee which satisfied them. Wan-Bissaka has gone. They got a lot of money from him. Is it odd they didn't really reinvest it? James McCarthy for 3 million, Jordan Ayew for 2.5.
I'm a bit puzzled by it. Okay, they've signed Kamarasa and James McCarthy. They have James McArthur. They have Cheku Huyata there as well. And they have Luka Milojevic. Are they trying to set some sort of record in sort of okay-ish midfielders? Like, how many of these guys do you need? And like, I don't want to like knock him too much, because when fit, he's not a bad player at all. But I mean, looking at this squad and deciding what we really need is James McCarthy might be just the most Roy Hodgson thing ever. I mean, some sort of peak Hodgson moment.
Has anyone ever gone, what we really need is James McCarthy?
I mean, I'm sure there's good footballer. No, but like, if you're a sort of lower mid-table Premier League team with a slightly flimsy midfield, I can see how this is what you need. It's just they have like four of them already, so I don't...
I hope he plays them all in a very sort of narrow four.
probably will. With like Wilf Zaha and, I don't know, Benteke or something up front. It'll be good.
Is there a chance that if Wilfried Zaha does down tools and sulk and refuse to put in any effort, that he could still go before the end of the month, go abroad?
Yeah, it's possible, isn't it? Palace have Everton on Saturday. Newcastle United. Andy Carroll is back. They've got Joe Linton as well. They spent 40 million on him, and Alan Saint-Maximin, amongst others.
This is an eclectic transfer window, isn't it?
Yeah. Benitez has gone. Bruce is in.
Signing the Angel of the North.
I feel so sorry for Steve Bruce that he's now not even the most ridiculous homecoming to Newcastle this summer. Yeah. When Steve Bruce was a kid growing up in Walker, just to the east of the centre of Newcastle, he dreamed of playing for Newcastle United. And repeatedly through his career, he's been thwarted. You know, he nearly joined Newcastle from Gillingham. He nearly joined them from Norwich. He nearly joined them twice as a manager from Birmingham. And finally, age 59, I think, he's finally got the chance. And he's done it in the most catastrophic circumstances possible. And even then, his thunder's stolen by the ponytail siege engine of Andy Carroll.
I do agree with you.
He must have dreamt of that. He'd walk out of the tunnel. You'd have that Mark Knopfler thing playing in the background. But Gallagher would be celebrating this great crook-nosed hero coming home. And actually, if they don't boo him as soon as he moves out the tunnel, that's actually a step forward.
Well, they might not be there because there's this boycott, right, planned for Sunday.
I think Andy Carroll is good, because in these days of sort of millionaire footballers who live in their mansions, you know, the fans, they need to feel that connection and to have a local person they can identify with on the treatment table so that they feel like they're right in there. And
it's a massive boost for a number of bars and casinos around Central
Newcastle. That is true. I actually don't think they'll go down, and I think Bruce isn't as much of a catastrophe as people make it out to be.
I totally agree, actually. If you look at his career as a manager, there's a lot of very short spells in charge for various reasons. At Sunderland, he was actually doing a pretty good job till Darren Bent was sold. And at Sunderland, it was a terrible double whammy. They sold Darren Bent. Then they had 7 games in a row where they played the previous season's top 6 plus Stoke away. They got 1 point from those 7 games. And suddenly the narrative's, oh, it's a disaster. Well, they'd been 7th before that start. They'd just beaten Chelsea 3-0 at Stamford Bridge. So they were doing fine, and two things came together. I think they'll probably be all right.
Bournemouth. Sort of good signings. Harry Wilson's exciting, but sort of low-key. Do they have any reason for any more optimism or not than...
Well, they've got to stop letting in goals.
Mm.
I mean, that's a very simple thing, that they just concede too many goals to kind of get above where they are.
Their away record last year was shocking as well.
Well, last season they conceded 70 goals, which was what, the third worst in the league. Their away records, 1-5, drew 1. So, yeah, 13 defeats away from home.
Do you think they'll play that young keeper over? Is Begovic still there? Is Begovic gone?
I think Begovic and Boris are still there, and I suspect that young fella who played the last game, 2 games of the season, could...
He had an absolute
Mark
worldie.
Travers.
He had a worldie
Irish,
against
Irish
Tottenham,
fella.
Didn't
yeah,
he?
Mark
played,
Travers.
Yeah, he had an absolutely brilliant game against Spurs. I just wondered if Begovic and Boris were sort of letting in goals that...
Well, Boric is 39 now.
Is he?
Yes, I mean, that'd be a weird lie.
Of all the lies to tell.
He's 39 until he's 40.
I think we're spending a lot of time on Bournemouth here now.
David Brooks, who was excellent for them last season, is injured and will miss a sizable chunk of the, at least the first half of the season, I think. So he could be lost. Callum Wilson has signed a long-term deal, which I was quite surprised by because I thought he had his eye on a move somewhere a bit bigger maybe, but he could still move and they'll get more money for him. But, you know, he has committed to the club.
All right, well, that's enough on Bournemouth.
And I don't think they'll get relegated this season for the first time in years, so they probably will.
That'll do for part two. Part three will be the rest of the Premier League and any other business. Welcome to part three. So the bottom of the table then. Bookies expect Sheffield United and Norwich to go down. Then there's a toss-up between Burnley, Brighton, Newcastle and Villa. Let's start with Burnley. Danny Drinkwater, just in on loan from Chelsea. Eric Peters, Jay Rodriguez as well, and Bailey Peacock-Farrell. The oldest squad in the Premier League. Lars, you obviously hate Burnley.
Drinkwater is a bit short for a Burnley player, isn't he?
And he's a good, nice passing midfield?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's completely out of place. No, listen.
If he can remember how to play football.
Jokes aside,
I'm that stat, I mean, there's 137 Premier League players have made their debuts since Dan Drinkwater last played.
Say that again?
There's 137 Premier League players have made their debuts since, debuts in the Premier League since.
Wow. Well, I mean he was doing a pretty solid Winston Bogarde, and now he's stepped out of it, which I think is admirable in its own way. No, I'm sure they'll be fine. Like, what they're doing kind of doesn't make sense, and it's not that fun to watch. But like, if you're from Burnley, happy days. You've got a Premier League team no one likes to play
Has
against.
Anything been damned with faint praise more than that sentence? I mean,
no, I mean, but I'm just...
If you're
I'm,
from hey, there, you might as
I'm
well
just saying,
turn up.
As someone who grew up in a very, very small town, and I remember we had... Our team was in the top division for a couple of years, and I remember most of the games I went to, and it was really great. And I'm sure Burnley fans are delighted to be where they are. And I'm sure they don't care that neutrals don't enjoy watching them, and they shouldn't either.
Chelsea will play half of Danny Drinkwater's wages. This is Richard Jolly. To put it another way, Chelsea paid $35 million for Drinkwater and about $10 million already in wages. They're now paying about $1 million for him to play for Burnley. He started 5 league games with them and played 30 minutes last season in defeat. Southampton. I think Southampton have more chance than the others of doing it.
I think there'd be a lot of Southampton fans who'd be very tetchy and annoyed with you for putting them in the bottom of the table section.
I apologise.
I suspect some of them may have their eye on a top third of the table finish and certainly mid-table. I'm still out on Raf Hasenhüttl, but... He does seem to be very highly regarded.
The order we're doing this is just where they finished last season,
okay,
by the way. But I also would like to say that producer Jonathan wrote the order, and I would have started with Southampton. they brought Danny Ings in permanently. Che Adams has come in as well. And he can score a goal or two,
can't he? Yeah, I like Che Adams. Think he'll do all right for them. No, I also like Hasenhüttl. I think it's a testament to the pulling power of the Premier League, be it money or prestige, that a guy who's finished second in the Bundesliga not that long ago goes to relegation threat in Southampton last season. I thought it was quite extraordinary for them to get him in. And listen, they weren't perfect. They conceded a whole bunch of goals when he was there, but I thought he got them into decent shape in terms of the amount of pressing they did. They looked a bit more structured. And having had a full pre-season with them, because I don't think you should underestimate how hard it is, because you get very little time on the training ground when you take over mid-season. He's had a full pre-season with them now. I'm quite excited about seeing them. The only thing that worries me, but they haven't really strengthened at the back, as far as I can tell, which, given how porous they were defensively, even after Hasenhüttl came in, that would concern me a little bit. But no, they should be a fun team.
Aaron Moy looks like a good signing for Brighton. I am a big fan of him.
Yeah, no, good player.
Thank you very much. Norwich.
But that's important, right? Because Graham Potter is trying to do, like, all my alarm bells are ringing here because I love Graham Potter. He's great. Like, everything about his story, working his way up from just the Swedish lower divisions, wants to play football the right way. But, like, him going to Brighton, who nearly gotten relegated 2 years in a row and with quite a defensive and reactive way of playing and trying to turn them into a more possession-based team, I mean, that there's so many different ways in which that can go wrong, right? I mean, you'd want it to succeed, but you could also easily see that the wheels come off of that wagon in a pretty big way. So Zamoy is a very elegant sort of passing midfielder. I think he's a very important addition for them.
Neil Maupay from Brentford as well scored 25 last year. Take a bit of the pressure off Glenn Murray, who... I mean, I presume
he's 57.
I presume he's at least 57. We'll still score 20 goals.
Which, again, if you want to play the way Potter wants to play, you need forwards who can press, right? So maybe not Glenn Murray for 90 minutes every week.
Norwich City won the league by 5 points last year. They held on to Timu Pukki, which is key for them. A lot of sort of low-cost moves. How much will they struggle, or do we think they'll be fine?
No, it'll be a struggle, but you'd expect that. I mean, budget-wise, they're nowhere near most of the Premier League, but they didn't. I mean, budget-wise, nowhere near a lot of the Championship. So, you know, Farke's done an incredible job to get them promoted, and it's how much he can dredge out of them this season. So,
I mean, Farke did a great job, and Chris Wilder did a great job as well. But the sort of two sides in that top part of the Championship that you didn't expect to be
in very different ways. But both of them did great jobs. Yeah,
Max Aarons is great young midfielder, and much will depend on how he fares in the step up. I'm worried about whether Timu Pukki is good enough to score goals in the top flight. If he is, great, they should be okay. And if he's not, they're in big trouble.
Well, they've brought in Dermot as well, haven't they, who seems never played in his career, except was always in Switzerland squad. So I feel like he's one of those players who have repeatedly written profiles before major tournaments, but based on zero information on the grounds that he's... I mean... Last season he played 2 games. Season before he played 4 games. Season before that he played 2 games. Season before that 9 games. Season before that 5 games. So
his hourly rate must be tremendous.
Yes, he and Danny Drinkwater, I imagine, will get on quite well.
You wonder as well if they like using stats for recruitment. Like, what do you do? Yeah. Like, you have very small sample sizes.
Sheffield United.
We got 2-2 last year. Maybe they think
that is incredible.
Guaranteed a goal every start.
That would be amazing.
Sheffield United.
Sheffield United's fans have already won this year's awards for chippiest fans in the Premier League before a ball is kicked. And I think, to be fair, they do have some justification because everyone's tipping them to go down. And last night on Sky Sports, Danny Mills gave them very little hope of staying up, which is fine, but he conveyed the impression that he's never actually seen them play under Chris Wilder and seems to think that Harry Bassett is still in charge and they'll be pumping it long to Alan Cork and Brian Dean as they attempt to stay up.
Someone had tweeted just a litany of videos of them playing good football.
Oh, it's not like...
I've a 50 quid bet on with Miguel Delaney. I reckon they'll stay up. I hope they do, but...
At evens.
Oh, Danny, what were you... You know, just say, you know what? I haven't seen them play. Could you ask me about someone else?
Or just, like, spend 5 minutes to look it up. Like, it's not hard to find the numbers and see that in terms of long passes played, they were right about around the middle of the pack in the Championship last year. So maybe don't talk about them being a long ball team. I mean, they might be that this year, but we don't know. I think when we're talking about the newly promoted teams and we look at them player for player, they always look a bit weaker than the other ones, right? And that's partially because few of us watch a lot of the Championship and they don't have a lot of recognisable names.
Even if you do watch a Championship, you never quite know how a player is good at that level, how he's going to perform at a slightly higher level.
But it is worth bearing in mind, like man for man, they might look like these two, especially like the two weakest teams in the league. It's worth bearing in mind that, I mean, newly promoted teams tend to do better than we expect. Mm. I mean, I think the number, I got some numbers from _BladesAnalytic from Twitter, a good friend of your Barry's, I believe, who said that over the last 22 seasons...
I have no beef with him.
He has no beef with you either. He told me to say so. Over the last 22 seasons, the average league position of a newly promoted side is around 15th, and only 29 out of 65 have gone straight back down again. So, I mean, we shouldn't write them off just because they have players that we haven't seen that much who don't look that good on paper.
They've got Ali McBurney in Swansea.
Yeah, he's a good player.
And Ravel Morrison.
Ravel Morrison.
Seems a massive risk to me. But.
Yeah. Well, if Wilder can get a tune out of him, great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
yeah.
And Chris Wilder, I know we're running short on time, but it's worth pointing out, I mean, getting Oxford promoted to League 2, getting Northampton from League 2 to League 1, and then Sheffield from League 1 to the Championship. So, like, pound for pound in the last few years, very few managers in the country have done better.
OK, Ravel Morrison's played for 10 clubs, including Sheffield United. In a sort of name that tune, how many do you think you can name, Barry?
Six.
Can anyone do better than six?
Sorry, what was the question?
Clubs Ravel Morrison has played for. Name that tune. Barry's saying six. Can you do seven?
I can't name seven clubs he's played for.
No.
I'll try seven.
You'll try seven. Will you go eight, Barry?
No, I don't think.
Okay,
I can go eight.
Jonathan Wilson. Name that tune in seven. Seven of Ravel Morrison's 10 clubs.
Do we count Manchester United?
Yes.
One. West Ham.
Two.
QPR.
Three.
Lazio.
Yeah.
Atlas in yeah. Mexico.
Yeah.
Östersund.
Yeah.
Sheffield United.
Yeah. Is that seven?
Birmingham.
You left out West Ham.
Correct. Birmingham. No, you said West Ham.
West Ham.
Cardiff? Are you at Cardiff?
Yes. You've literally got all of them. It's QPR twice. So that, I don't know if that made the...
That's impressive. Sort
of very well done, Jonathan Wilson. You win a copy of your own book. Aston Villa... have spent loads and loads of money, haven't they? And they've signed, what, how many players? 2, 4, 6, 8
13,
10,
I think.
12, 13 players.
There's a worry that they're going to do a Fulham on it. I think the worry is unfounded. Because
I mean, some of them are permanent deals for players who've got them promoted. Tyrone Mings, El Ghazi,
yeah, but
as well.
The manager has had relationships with a lot of the... working relationship. Okay. Stop sneering like
good
a
Lord,
child.
It's late in the
saying?
Pod. It's late at night. It's late in the pod.
This is why we can't do evening pods.
Previously, so, you know, they're not strangers to him. I'd be curious to see how it works out for them. I reckon they'll be safe around mid-table, I think. Just doing out of curiosity the other day, newly promoted sides in the first match back in the Premier League, or their first match of the season... In the last 5 years, newly promoted sides have played 15 opening games. How many do you reckon they've won?
Four.
Three.
Five.
Two.
Oh.
Damn it.
I thought it would be more.
I'm really enjoying how this has just turned into a
played
a
15,
bad quiz
1, 2,
no, it's a good quiz show.
I actually, again, didn't hear the question. I just said a number based on what they went with. I think if I'd have known the question, I might have done better. But I might also have done worse.
Can you tell us anything about Wesley, a Brazilian striker they brought in from Club Bruges?
Not beyond the fact that he scored some goals in the Belgian league, but not like a crazy amount. And I haven't really seen him, to be perfectly honest. So, I mean, that would be the big risk going into the season.
Big
I think,
lad, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a centre, big target guy. But my concern would be, yeah, because going into the season, they've, like Barry said, they've mainly re-signed some guys who were there on loan. They've signed some guys Dean Smith knows. So all these signings wouldn't worry me. But they, if Wesley doesn't work out for them, they look well thin up front. So that's a big thing for them that he works.
All right, that's all the Premier League clubs. Well done, everybody. Baz, you wanted to talk a little bit about rule changes.
Well, I was just looking to see what rule changes there were, and there were more than I was aware of originally. You know, the one about the drop ball. Obviously, we've got VAR coming in. We've got the coin toss has been changed. And
what's that been changed? I didn't know about that.
Well, originally, if you won the toss, you got to choose which end you wanted to play into. Now you can choose which end you want to play into or kick off.
Okay.
So, yeah, that could revolutionise the game. And obviously, this is one about goal kicks. So the goalkeeper no longer has to kick the ball out of the penalty area when he's
taking. Is a really good idea, and I think it's a very sort of smart preemptive move, because what you'd start to see with teams playing out from the back was the keeper would slightly underhit a pass, and the fullback, aware he was about to be put under pressure, mm-hmm. would step inside the box, touch the ball, and he just gets to take the goal kick again. Well, they've stopped you doing that now, and that's. I'm sceptical about some of the law changes. That seems to me a very sensible.
It does, but also, it also means that if you could take a goal kick, it's sort of harder for the attackers to get to close everyone down straight away. Do you see what I mean? If
they have to cover a lot more space.
Yeah, if you can play a goal kick 2 yards in the box to your defender to move the ball quickly.
What's wrong with that?
No, it's good. I'm saying it's good for both reasons.
There has also been a real change that goalkeepers are not allowed to score by throwing the ball into the opponent's goal.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which I feel like was a rule change that had to happen. This has been a big problem in the game at all levels.
It's one of those things that feels like an anomaly that should have been... Why was that loophole there? Yes. And all it takes is a windy day and a Kasper Schmeichel kind of catching one right. And
is that all it takes?
I can't stand that. Can't be allowed.
But surely it should be allowed. It would be amazing.
At free kicks now as well, if you build a defensive wall with three or more players in it, the other team aren't allowed to have any players get involved, which is going to cut out a lot of faff.
Where are they going to go?
Well, they can go within a metre or something. It's not they've got to clear out the way, so they're not allowed to go.
To go to the other half.
Okay, sorry,
when you're being subbed, you can't do the old thing of standing as far away from the bench as possible. You then have to go out over the touchline where you are.
I suspect
that won't last.
But it is one of my favourite bits of time-wasting shenanigans when you signal to someone that they're going to get subbed and they make sure next time the ball is out that they...
I mean, there are going to be a lot of players, I imagine, early on in the season getting booked because their instinct is just to go towards the manager, because that's the way it's always been. To remember they have to just go off wherever they are.
And managers and coaching staff can now be shown yellow and red cards.
Okay. Derby County news. Well, they beat Huddersfield 2-1. Tom Lawrence scoring two... lovely goals, actually. The first, a lob into an empty net where he took a lovely first touch. Second, a nice effort with his left foot. That means that for the first time in Football League history, the three relegated sides from the top flight all lost their first game of the following season in the second tier. And then Derby announced that Wayne Rooney will be coming over after MLS to be a player coach. He'll be wearing the number 32 shirt. Some are suspicious. There may be a link between that choice and Derby's sponsor, 32 Red.
Suspicious.
Rooney back in English football. How excited should we be?
I'm not really excited at all. I mean, I think he's only coming back because his wife put the foot down because her and the kids hadn't settled in Washington. It's a good signing. Derby are proving very astute when it comes to circumventing financial fair play rules. You know, popped the sale of their stadium last season for a lot more than it was valued at to an owner who very handily leased it back to them for presumably not very much money. And, yeah, this Rooney's arrival has enabled them to get a record-breaking shirt deal with 32 Red, and Mel Morris was making much of the charity work they do in the community because gambling companies are, of course, renowned for their charity work and benevolence to those who are suffering mental health issues in this case. I'm not sure how charitable they were towards the guy they were fined £2 million for last season, for some guy who had earned about $2,500 a month, was betting ludicrously over the top sums of money, totaling about $750,000 on their casino website. And they were fined for not only not seeing the red flags and stopping his account and helping him, but actively encouraging him to gamble more. So I say this as someone who, I've said it before, I work with you on a radio show. We have a segment sponsored by a gambling company. It's difficult to work in sports media without taking the bookie's coin. But, it doesn't sit right with me. I'm not having a go at Derby specifically. Just so many clubs that are sponsored by betting companies. Mm-hmm. It's unhealthy. Half the teams in the Championship are sponsored by betting companies. And I think it's... half the Premier League clubs are sponsored by a betting company and 16 out of 24 in the Championship.
Yeah, the point you make about actively encouraging is something that I've seen before.
Vile. Like, well, Paddy Power have done it to a guy in Ireland as well who ended up in jail for betting with money he'd stolen from his employers at the post office.
And look, you just feel there should be enough money going around that you can let people who have gambling addictions deal with that without...
encouraging.
Exactly right, because you know, gambling should exist like drinking should and smoking should. It's like just...
No, smoking shouldn't.
No, you're probably right. You should give up, Barry.
I know.
Some other signings of note. The transfer window, Steve Morrison has gone to Shrewsbury from Millwall. And Julian Joachim still playing football.
You're joking.
Signed for Europa Point in Gibraltar at 44.
Oh, fair play.
Good for him. And in Championship Manager generated player names, Reading have signed George Puskas from Inter Milan for an undisclosed fee.
Jason Puncheon has gone to a club in Cyprus.
Has he? Diogo Forlan's retired. How would you describe his career in 20 seconds, Jonathan Wilson?
Huge successful, really good player. He and his father and his grandfather have all won the Copa America with Uruguay, which I think is unique. Maybe wasn't quite his best at United, but fundamentally an excellent footballer.
Kieran says, how's the crowdfunding campaign going for Wilson's haircut? I propose a Steve McLaren hair island myself. No one said, I thought someone would set it up, Jonathan. And you seem to have, in this week, have sort of distanced yourself from the pledge.
Well, only because I was bullied and people were saying, oh, you've got to do it for charity. My head. speaking of Steve McLaren, he was on Sky today.
Yeah.
His accent is still all over the place.
His confidence is probably in tatters.
But he sounds like an English person speaking to foreign people. Like
Do you have any ketchup?
Somebody said. Did he just spend all afternoon on Sky saying egg and chips in an increasingly loud voice?
He seems to have slowed down how he speaks, but the result of that is his accent sort of wavers. I mean, I know Mark's and wavers all over the place, but his wavers to the Netherlands as well.
I'm just going to be very still, I think.
Finally, here's a message from Chaz. On the subject of Jonathan being moody on Monday, he said, I recently tweeted Jonathan Wilson that I'd seen a couple on the tube having a disagreement over putting Jonathan's book in his or her bag. But then after Googling his name to see what Jonathan looks like, I realised the man on the tube may have been him.
Oh, maybe, I know. I remember this incident.
Maybe this is why he was moody. I then got another tweet from Chaz saying the book hadn't been published yet, so it definitely was him.
No, yes. I was going to a park run. I brought the book for somebody who'd helped me with the book.
Yeah.
And she protested her bag was not large enough to fit it in, and could I take it home and give it to her at a different time? And I was like, fuck's sake.
A line from producer Jonathan, which says, end the podcast. thank you, Jonathan.
Cheers, thank you.
Thank you, Lars.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.